Well, the turtle says it's Trump's fault. This is the news, according to me. Well, good morning, folks. It is 10:18 Eastern Standard Time on a Wednesday. This is December 14th. It's the day before the 15th. Some of you get paid on the 15th, so it's, you know, day before payday. Otherwise, it's not. If it's not, your payday, then that's too bad. Some of you get paid on the 16th, Friday, whenever you get paid. It's the day. It's a couple days before your payday, or maybe it's after your payday, or maybe every day's payday for you people, or maybe you don't have a payday. It's whatever it is. That's the news, according to me. So the turtle, as he's well known. We'll talk about him. First, let's get some serious important business, which is what's in my cup. I still have some Dunkin' Donut sweet tea here that I stuck in the refrigerator in my room. I'm in Atlanta, by the way, until tomorrow. Tomorrow I go to Dallas-Fort Worth Airport here from Atlanta, and I have some meetings there. Gotta get that taken care of. And then I head back to South Bend. Hopefully. And then once I get back into South Bend, I'll be there a couple days and take back off again to Atlanta again. It's just, I'm just a traveling guy. There's not a lot of grass growing under my feet. But if there was, there might be growing above my feet. Maybe that's, I don't know. Anyway, I don't sit around much. I wish I could. I'd rather be just a Jabba the Hutt sitting around. Whatever. So we have a interesting situation here, and I wish I could play the audio from this. There were some audio clips that I wanted to put together. One of them was Mitch McConnell talking about how, wow, we didn't win the Senate. He's explaining why he didn't win the Senate. He's blaming it on Trump. He's saying, well, you know, in every case, you know, if you take it on a case by case basis, or if you look at each race individually. We didn't have, we couldn't primary. We didn't have quality candidates in the primary because they were all Trump supporter. That's what he's saying, is they're Trump people. They were Trump primary candidates. That's why they didn't win. Now, keep in mind what's going on here, folks. Mitch McConnell is establishment. The establishment Democrats were sending money to Trump candidates, to their campaigns during the primary. They wanted to see Trump candidates get the win out on the primaries because they felt like they were easier to beat. And here's the reason they were easier to beat. Because Mitch McConnell, who controls the money coming from the PAC in the Republican-controlled Senate races, and he actually used the word control. He said we couldn't control the primary election. He used that term. He said we couldn't control the primary elections because of President Trump and his influence. Well, pay very close attention to this, folks. What he's saying is Trump candidates are not quality candidates. In other words, they're not establishment, go along with the flow, submit to the powers that be candidates. They're establishment candidates. He wanted to lose the Senate in this case. When they couldn't get their candidates in, they wanted to lose the Senate. And here's how we know this. Because he did not support any of those candidates with the PAC funds that were available. They sent money to other places. Huge differences in the amount of money that he sent to support Trump candidates. So the primary, the Democrats pulled a good move here. They supported Trump candidates, knowing full well, and probably with, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a behind closed doors, under the table, whatever you're going to call it, smoke-filled room arrangement made with McConnell that if the Trump candidate gets in, that McConnell would not support them. Because it's all about Trump. They have to vilify Trump and make him marginalized, make it look like he's not winning. I just saw a headline the other day that says, Trump now is behind in polls against DeSantis and Biden. Whatever, folks, whatever. Here's a dirty little game they play as well. This is a side note. This is what happened in, you know, Kerry Lake made this comment and is actually very interesting in terms of what actually happened. I guess over 60% of the voting machines were down on election day. Now, see, this is what they do. The election went on for a month. Now, and the Republicans need to get with this. They need to start getting into this. I don't know that early voting will help because it gives them more of an opportunity to throw away votes. Now, who's keeping those votes? They're votes that are done early are now having to be stored somewhere, which gives them more opportunity as well. I mean, I don't trust the whole process in this early morning. This is why we don't do early voting. This is why I don't trust it, because those votes have to sit somewhere. Gives them more opportunity. Like we're finding out now that there have been mailmen who've been grabbing ballots and throwing them away. It's a process that is not as accountable. We want transparency and accountability. Of course, it makes it more accessible when we have early voting. You're disenfranchising people by not having early voting. No, it's not. Not at all. If they cared about election integrity at all, they would know full well that the election machine, in fact, it was the Democrats themselves who had a big hearing on voting machines back in 2012. They were all concerned the machines were hacked. This is the game they play. So this early voting thing, so that doesn't get interrupted, does it? They can harvest as many ballots as they want because they know that most Republicans vote on election day. All they have to do is screw up election day in places that matter. So they know that all they have to do is ruin election day. So the machines were down. People were waiting in line. And then they would leave the line. They would go to another precinct to try to vote. That one was down. They had ballots not being counted properly because the printers weren't working. You know, you have one day to do one job and you screw it all up. Do you think that's potentially, you know, voting machine, counting machines, they go down all of a sudden. 60-some percent of them, over half of them. Gee, how convenient. The whole election system there in Arizona was just, it's exactly what we think it is. If something looks and smells like a duck, it's a duck, okay? That's just the way it quacks like a duck. The whole thing's a duck. You know it is. If one thing happens, that's something. And of course, then if you say anything about it, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. It's just normal. These are normal things that happened. Yeah, that's what we're told about Twitter too. We're still being told that. Well, this is just normal. This is their private company. All these excuses they have for why they did all this stuff. And it's very, very obvious and very, I tell you, there's a lot of independents out there. And a lot of even left-leaning people right now. Jimmy Dore is no right-wing guy, and he understands what's going on with this whole Twitter thing. There are people out there who realize that once they get the information on this thing, how deep this thing goes, how much they were connected to things on with regard to the FBI, COVID, Fauci, the administration, the current administration that's in power, the stuff that has gone on over the last years. How deep it is involved with characters that are trying to subvert our elections. It's no stretch at all. You have to understand the absolute hatred for Donald Trump that drives people, the insanity, the derangement that is there. It is absolutely off the charts, folks. Unbelievable. And then there's the other side of it. You've got some Trump nuts, and I call them, who are just so totally off the chart for Trump that they think he can't make any mistakes, that everything he's doing, he's playing, 12D chess and all. He's just, he's 12 steps ahead of everybody. Now, here's the reason I think Trump needs to get back into office. This is the only reason I think that Trump needs to get back into office. Because he's been in the position. He now knows who the characters are that he can trust and who he can't trust. He tried to trust them. He tried to make deals with all the, even with the establishment people on his own side. He tried to buddy up with O'Connell. He gave him an opportunity. Mitch didn't know what to do with all the energy and excitement that was going on in the Trump campaign. He didn't like it. He likes the status. He likes to lead from behind is what he likes to do. He's willing to let the Democrats win just to keep Trump out. It's the kind of guy he is. He wants the quiet politics of let's make a deal with all the money movers in the world that can slip back into my pocket. Now, here's the thing about this whole McConnell thing. McConnell, if you're so powerful, if you are so big on candidates in the primaries, if you're so popular, if you're such a good politician and people love you so much, why don't you go out and do some campaigning for these people in the primaries? How many times did you see McConnell stumping for any of the primary candidates that he wanted to see win? You don't see him because he can't draw a crowd. Mitch McConnell's going to show up. Oh, you're going to get, what are you going to get, 100 people there? Oh, Donald Trump's going to show up. How many are you going to get there? About 10,000 people going to show up, 5,000 people, whatever it's going to be. Going to pack the place out, going to have people outside in the parking lots. Despite all of the attacks, all of the rhetoric, the defamation of this guy, he's still popular. I guarantee you, when he starts hitting the campaign trail, in the midst of everything that's going on, you got, look, folks, there's, I'm not going to mince words here. You have some very deranged individuals running around the White House the other day celebrating this new law that they signed into act. You've got drag queens, which are, excuse me, you have a mental disorder. I think they're very proud of the fact that they're doing their little shows in front of children. They just think that's wonderful. Well, of course you would. This is disgusting stuff, folks. I'm sure that Sodom and Gomorrah were very protective of their marginalized class. In fact, to the point where they were running around in mobs, we have a moral deficiency in this country. And unfortunately, the church has sat back and watched it happen. They have bowed the knee. Because they don't want to lose their tax-exempt status. Well, I got news for you. I don't give money to the church because of its tax-exempt status. Now, maybe there's a lot of people out there who do. You know what? You don't need those people. If that's the reason they're giving to the church, then they're giving for the wrong reason anyway. So, in fact, that's why I like to just give cash anonymously. I'll just drop something in a plate, I really don't care that you know who it is that gave it to you, and I don't really care for the tax exempt status. I really don't care. There you go. Let's change gears here real quickly. Extreme left turn. Let's talk about the Twitter thing for a minute. The left is playing this off, like I said earlier. The left is trying to play this thing off as if it's nothing. There's nothing there. This is a nothing burger. It's nothing, nothing to be seen here. It's just typical, you know, stuff that they do. I'd listened to Mark Dice this morning. He was talking about the way the NSA, the CIA, and the FBI, and other organizations within the law enforcement government, part of the bureaucrats, the way they actually work with, they have a new agency. It's changed its name. I can't remember what the name of it is now. Department of Commerce, something of it. They use this agency to guide and direct and to take control and influence all kinds of things, mostly the type of content that you will see in news organizations. The AP, this whole thing, the AP is kind of it's a way to choke. To run through all, it was started off as a great thing, which actually was actually started by J.P. Morgan, believe it or not, J.P. Morgan's group. The Associated Press was started by the supposed group of individuals who were going to start a clearinghouse, a place where people could post things through the, it was like a warehouse, if you will, of all kinds of news reporting. And people could draw on those things, and it was like the Associated Press was supposed to be this clearinghouse, basically, if you will, of news articles, interviews, information. Kind of like The Wire would come across The Wire on the AP. So all news organizations would get this. They'd put it out on the AP, and everybody would get it. Kind of thing, like a national broadcast to all the news organizations. And news organizations could pick up stories if they wanted to, if they didn't want to. Now, the question is, who's controlling what's going through that situation? So you got this ability to, if you will, regulate everything that goes through there. People can put things on the AP, and then, of course, they can do the same thing with that they do with Twitter. They can throttle it back. They can, you know, they can put it out there, but make it so it's hard to search. All these things that can happen. And this is where things get very nefarious and they get very controlled. And it's in and of itself, it's a great idea. Problem is, who's in control of it? Who's actually running the show over there? Bunch of volunteers? No, it's run by an organization. I guarantee you, the kings of the world, the Soroses, the mega millionaires, mega billionaires, people who are controlling, trying to maintain their narrative, are the ones controlling the stuff. Zucker, who was in charge of CNN, had meetings every morning, and he was exposed by Project Veritas. They would talk about the narrative. They would talk about what they were going to, how they were going to influence the news, the kind of stories they were going to run, the way they were going to run the stories, the way they were going to frame the stories with certain words, keywords. This stuff goes on every day. This is what they do. They have focus groups. They try to figure out what words work and what words don't. And that's why you hear the same words coming out of everybody's mouth in the mainstream media. It's the way it's done. This thing is so manipulative. It goes beyond comprehension sometime, the way this whole thing works. Again, we go about our daily lives unaware this is all happening around us, because we don't want to have to mess with this stuff. It was very easy for, by the way, there was recently a delegation went down to Cuba, from the Democrat Party, went down to Cuba to discuss with them trade stuff and all that kind of stuff. Situations where they're at there. Probably went down there and take some notes on how to do things, how to run a better dictatorship. But they went down and had this big meeting down there and came back. Always makes you wonder. Did they make the notes of the meeting public? Or is it all, do we know everything that went on there? Couldn't they just have Skyped, that meeting? Because, COVID. They had to actually go down there and have personal, private meetings with these people. It's not what happens during the day. It's what happens in the evenings when they're having dinner together. When they're on the golf course, whatever it is that they're doing down there. It's not technically an official meeting. This kind of thing happens in local politics as well as national, international politics. I was privied to some information in my hometown at one time when I had a business that operated on property that was owned by the city. And they had meetings, board meetings, for this particular property that were open to the public, but you never knew when they were going to be. I happened to know because I was there all the time. And the press would show up. Take notes. Occasionally the press would ask a question and they would say, well, here's how we want you to report this. And they would literally tell them how they wanted it to be framed. Now the reporter had the choice of doing it that way or not. But then the problem was the reporter would not be invited back to the meeting again or told when the meeting was going to be or wouldn't be told until the last minute. The other little dirty little secret in this whole thing was that the board members would have lunch right before the meeting. They wouldn't have lunch on public property. They would have it at some other restaurant. The lunch would last longer, typically, sometimes as long or longer than the actual meeting would go, because the entire lunch was all about how they were going to conduct the meeting, what they were going to say. There were times when I would hear them say things that sounded like they were already rehearsed in those meetings. And obviously they were. It was interesting how one person would say something and the next person would say something. Nobody would interrupt anybody. It sounded like it was a play that was well rehearsed. And they would say the right things, on to the next thing. I could give you some examples that I remember to this day, but I'm not going to get into the details on that. Because that would... This is the kind of thing that happens all the time. The game is played. It's all political theater. To some degree, I understand, having to be careful about how you frame things in that regard. This even happens in church politics. I was a part of a set of meetings in which the congregation was involved. And I happened to know some people who were in leadership at that time who did not like what was going on. And I was closely involved in prayer with this individual, one individual that was kind of under the gun because he was kind of going against the flow, kind of pushing back some of the stuff that upper leadership was trying to push on the congregation. There was a building project going on, or they wanted to start a building project. One of the things that they decided to, in my opinion, trick the congregation on. Now, the way the church government was set up at this particular church, there was no way to, it wasn't going to be voted on. They were trying, but they did have to some degree, placate their congregation because those are the people who were giving and they didn't want everybody to walk off. So they were trying to convince everybody why they were spending church funds on this project. One of the key points in this project was that they would not have the project be over $1 million. It had to be under $1 million because the big million word would probably scare people too much. So it came in, guess where the project came in? $947,000. Now, the dirty little secret was that was for the project. That was for the building itself, the slab, the brick and mortar. That did not include things like heating and air conditioning, doorknobs, doors, windows. if you'd have added everything up that they needed to actually have everything working, it was over $1 million. But they had to frame it, literally, with just the frame. Not a usable building, just the building. $947,000. That got them in under the $1 million thing, and then we could, you know, have overruns later on all the other things that we're going to need for the building. Pay for those things as we go. This is the way they finagled it. This is the reason, one of the reasons, that I decided to start asking some questions before I started attending other churches about their church government. Not many people ask those kinds of things. They'll ask what they believe. But they want to ask questions about who's in charge here. Who's the lead pastor? Who can fire the lead pastor? Who's on the board? Who decides who's on the board? There's those kinds of questions. How does the money flow? Who's in charge of the money? Is there an independent board for that? Just things like that. It's just, when you get into the business side of the church, that organization, you understand Jesus didn't die for that brick and mortar place. He didn't die for that particular denomination. He didn't die for an organization. He died for you. The church is there to serve you. Not the other way around. There are a lot of church leaders who believe that your submission to the church is there, that gives them the ability to then serve you. They're serving you by making you submit to them. If you don't, well, you're outcast. You're expelled. You're disassociated. Even if you're not really kicked out, well, we'll still take your money. But you're not going to have any influence. You're not going to be in leadership here. You're not going to be a part of this, of leading and guiding this place. Just come in, sit down, give us your money, and then leave. We don't want to hear from you. We don't want to hear your opinion. Until you comply. It's very subtle, but this is the way they do it. People don't realize, I think sometimes the people who are in charge, the people who are leaders, literally have justified the way they do this kind of stuff, and they think that they're doing the right thing for people. Because they have this perverted sense. Well, first of all, they have this huge cloud over their head where they have to make these payments every week. They have to make budget every week. I was a part of a church that had a budget of $15,000 a week. A week. You have to have a pretty sizable congregation, and you have to have things going on. But they had to have that money for, just to make their payments. And the person in charge of that, unfortunately, had his own name underwriting the loan on that thing. So yeah, he's not going to upset the apple cart. He's not going to, you know, they got a system, a program on Sunday morning that works, and they're not going to change it. It's the formula. We have some intro music. We have a countdown clock. Someone comes out, says hello. We have two songs, read a scripture, have another song, have video announcements, somebody comes out and gives some other announcements. We get into a feel-good message, life-applicable message. And afterwards, we have a place where visitors can go and learn more about the church occasionally. And you have 15 minutes, and we start another service. Same thing over again. Exactly the same thing over again. So that's the way it works. And they get their people in, they do their giving, they have their sacred offering time. And I'm not saying that in of itself is necessarily wrong. What I am saying is it leads to a very distorted worship experience. I call it that. It becomes more about the machine, more about the mechanics and the show, than it does about the actual person you are going to go there to pay honor to and to worship. It's not worship anymore. You're worshiping the system, the machine, the show. A feel-good experience. Yeah. So here we are. The good news, the really good news, is that God still works through that kind of a situation. God still speaks to people individually in the midst of those situations. The people who show up are still seeking God, mostly. The vast majority of people are they're seeking God. The machine might be a problem. The leadership might be all askew in their motives. But the people who are coming there seeking God, well, God's going to meet them. But it's usually going to be not what's happening up front that does that. He's just going to speak to hearts in the midst of their situation. It happens. That's just, God doesn't see lines that he can't cross in the Catholic Church or in the Protestant Church or the Lutheran Church, whatever organization it is. He's still going to, he works around that. He's bigger than that. That's the good news. So you may be at a church that you don't think it's perfect, or you're kind of frustrated with leadership, whatever it is. And you can work on those things. There's nothing wrong with working on the issues that you've got in your church. However, keep in mind, God is bigger than those issues. That's the God we serve. So folks, once again, with everything that's going on, with everything that's happening around us, and I just to add to the conspiracy, you know, pile on here, the government is talking, everybody's into this crypto thing. Of course, the government loves the fact that people are, they like, that want crypto. The problem is that now the government wants to start their own crypto. We want to start our own crypto. They don't understand crypto at all, because it's that the whole point of it is, it's, You can't just, what they want to start is digital currency. They want to go to a cashless system, which we're practically heading for anyway. And that's where we're going. That's what's going to end up happening. We're going to have cashless society at some point. At that point, it will be very easy, very, very, very easy. You saw what happened up in Canada, when all of a sudden they decide who you can pay, what you can pay, where your funds will go, who's going to control your funds in the digital sphere. You won't have anything to hold. You won't have anything in your pocket. It's all going to be in the ethosphere, which will be real interesting when there's an EMP that goes off and all the electronics get shut down. We'll be back to trading again. Bartering systems. So keep this in mind, folks. Just keep all that in mind. It's just, you know, something that's happening in the world. We're heading towards a particular direction, and as we start to head that way, in my opinion, things will escalate and go faster, because they have to, because they know people will catch on to them if they don't. As soon as they know that the noose is around our neck and it's tightened to the point where we can't get out of it anymore, that's when they will cinch it shut. So be on guard, be alert, be aware, and we will see through this thing together as we serve and follow our King, our Heavenly King, who will at some point decide it's time for us to get out of here and deal with those who are left. Once again, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for being a part of the show. And, I will not be having a show tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a little bit of a stressful day. A lot of traveling, a lot of issues to deal with tomorrow. And then Friday morning, most assuredly, there will probably be a show. I don't know how early it will be, because it all depends on how late I get in on Thursday night. So once again, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for praying for this podcast. Thanks for praying for each other in the nation. God bless.